Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 16th day of May, 2014. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois. Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities. He is in Lafayette, Indiana. And Brian Stark from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Our special guest for the day out of Chicago, Illinois is Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Well, let's begin our discussion this afternoon, gentlemen, with this question. Soft red, hard red, and corn all plummeted for the week. Some of that due to what happened in WASDE, or the World Agricultural and Supply Demand Estimates from a week ago. Were there other good reasons for this marketplace to go lower? We'll start with you, Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I think from a fundamental point of view, Todd, when you look out at the planting progress we made in a week's time up until we saw the storms cross the center belt into the eastern belt this week, we jumped pretty good in the progress ratings here this past Monday, and I think the trade reacted to that. The funds, I think, are taking some profit and testing some of the major moving averages. If you look at the December average, the 200-day is right around 476. We tested that today and bounced off of it, and I think right now the market is kind of in a wait-and-see pattern now that we've progressed enough from a planning perspective to see how we can finish up the month of May.
Merrill Crowley, your view?
I think I have to agree with Brian. I don't have a whole lot more to add to that. Market was overbought, and we needed to flush some of these longs out if we're ever going to go higher.
And Bill Gentry.
Yeah, I think taking some of the risk premium out now that we've knocked out one of the variables of production is in line for the corn market. I would say kind of a shadow in the wheat market is probably the unwinding of some of the more higher protein wheat, like the hard red winter wheat versus the soft red winter wheat, because they've been spreading that pretty aggressively for the last several weeks.
And so you're of the opinion that we don't need to worry about putting the northern corn belt into the ground yet? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I think at this particular point in time, as of Monday, we had 60% of the crop planted. Granted, we didn't make much progress this week, but we'll probably see the USDA put out a 65% number on Monday. Average is probably 70 to 77. We still have got a week or 10 days before the end of the month. The trade thinks that it's getting planted, and obviously the futures discount what they think is coming down the road. So what I would say is they are assuming that the crop is going to be planted, but as we put in our update today, I think emergence is going to be a more significant feature because there are several areas that are well behind on emergence, and some of that seed's been in the ground better than 3 or 4 weeks.
And Brian, when you talk to the rest of the crew in the Andersons, spread from Nebraska all the way into Ohio, what do you hear from them about emergence and crop conditions for corn?
I think so far the spring's been very good for most of our locations across the belt. If you look, obviously Nebraska's a little dry, but as you look to the east, really the only area for our operations that lag is Michigan. But that's typical for this time of the year. Back to what Bill said, I think the trade is really focused on the fact that they think we're going to get it planted. And your prevent plant dates for the northern states, Minnesota and the Dakotas, don't range until May 25th-ish. So we're probably a week to 10 days away before the trade starts to get concerned about some of those other corn acres not getting in the ground.
Okay. So, Merrill, when you put it all into perspective and what you've heard so far, are you going to be friendly to this market or continue to be bearish to the market? And I don't know which way you've been so far, so why don't you give me that too?
Well, initially I was pretty bearish, I guess I'd say, of this market early on. Sometimes I wonder if the fundamentals mean what they have in other years, and by that we have all these funds coming in from the financial market buying up the commodities almost regardless of what the fundamentals are and more in line of what the price level was. If the USDA comes out with a slower planting process, progress, especially in those northern states, this market could easily see a rebound. So with a decent correction in the 50 to 60% area for the corn and beans and the wheat, I would be willing to take a shot at buying this market.
Merrill's interested in possibly buying the market. Bill, I want to come back to you. Not concerned so much about the putting the crop in the ground. Is there any reason to think that the guys in the northern areas, now that we put the ratio back into a different area for corn and soybeans, that is the ratio, that they might go ahead and just do soybeans rather than corn?
You know, we've talked about that, and we've talked to our guys up further north. For the most part, their revenue is not going to be the same for beans. The genetics and the yield punch in those northern areas for beans is typically second rate to corn. So they are going to crowd the corn as much as they can. Now, if they are absolutely forced at the end of the, you know, the 25th of May, or they get into that last week and really can't go, sure, there will be some shifts in, towards beans. But right this minute, they're going to go after the corn as aggressively as they can.
And I suppose that seems to make some sense to me, Brian Stark, because the further we go north, the more corn on corn there is.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. I think guys will continue to try and plant corn through the month of May into those prevent plant deadlines, and from there they'll have to be forced to make a decision. I still think that if it stays wet, you're liable to see them take PP just as much as plant beans, just because they're normal to that game the last 3 or 4 years, and it makes a lot of sense, especially in North Dakota, where they really lag progress right now.
Brian, what's the word on the big drop in the wheat for this week? Down 48 cents and the soft red down 61 and the hard red?
Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, I haven't paid much attention to the hard red wheat market. Obviously, that's a little bit surprising because I know they've put a little bit of water in the forecast for the plains, but some of the wheat out there, from what we've been told, reminiscent of the Dust Bowl days, is too far gone, and I think it's really up in the air. That crop could continue to shrink, but from the soft red perspective, we are of the opinion that if you look at the market in Chicago, obviously the best liquidity is there, and soft red's been rallying in sympathy, although hard red gains on it, and I think it got to a point where it's been overpriced. I think most of the soft red wheat that's grown looks pretty good in the eastern part of the Corn Belt. And I think we're looking at a carryout that could actually increase and maybe even trigger a VSR tick here down the road, whereas the Kansas City hard red wheat market may be in a different dichotomy where they're dealing with a shortage of protein.
And very quickly, I'd like all of your views on the soy complex, November beans in particular, just down 4.75 for the week. That's not a bad performance. We'll start with Merrill Crowley.
Well, I think part of that is due to the unwinding of the spread between the old crop, new crop. And I think the other part of it is, like we've been talking about, with the corn-soybean ratio coming back to the 2.5 to 1, I think they're trying to push that up and preserve soybean acres.
And Mr. Gentry?
Yes, sir. I think right along those lines, the planting progress numbers, if you look at its conventional wisdom as far as trade think, typically corn gets planted first, beans get planted second. Granted, today we have a lot more planting capacity, and a lot of guys can run at the same time with corn and beans. But when you step back a half a step, I think realistically we haven't got as much beans in the ground, so the selling in the new crop complex was probably a little bit lighter, which probably exacerbated that spread a little bit too.
And Brian?
I don't have much to add beyond what Bill and Merrill added. I would agree with their sentiments on why Novi beans were able to sustain a little bit this week.
Let's bring Jerry Gulke in from Chicago, Illinois at this time. He's at the Gulke Group. Jerry, thanks for taking the time. First, update me on how far along you are in your home area, that Rockford area, and maybe the snowfall there, and then what you think about the northern areas too.
Well, we got done with corn, which is pretty easy for me to do because I've cut back my production quite a bit in acres. But I think we're probably 85% done in northern Illinois, and it's wet. They tell me, my agronomist today says we got a couple of warm, windy days, and we may be in the field in a couple, 3 days. No soybeans have been planted on my farm. I still got a few hundred acres left. Further north, I think, listening to what everybody says, I can't disagree with most of anything except the perception of prevent plant in North Dakota. You know, they dislike it. They don't like it unless you're a fat cat and you've got your land paid for, and then it's an easy way out. But that land is terrible to deal with after you've had prevent plant with it. It just doesn't dry out late in later years. And so we may see something planted in those prevent plant acres down the road, even until the even if they got a, as my son-in-law in northern Minot says, north of Minot said he's going to scratch in canola if he has to, because prevent plant just does not pay in the long run. But they're really behind, and I think the general consensus up there is that, you know, May 25th, which is not only the some of the prevent plant dates, but also a date that they recall from years past that we don't want any more of that same stuff we've already got in the bin, and that's high moisture, low quality, high-cost drying situation, and very, very questionable logistics that, you know, if I got my bin full already, do I want to plant some more of that same variety that's at a loss and already, and you're starting to lose yield? And I just did a quick number on it. You know, if they've got crop insurance, which is really doesn't help much, you know, it's designed what it was supposed to be for this year, and that's a stopgap measure. But if you look at 80% of our crop insurance situation, then you subtract a 90-cent basis, maybe up to $1.18 next fall, it doesn't work. So I don't know. I think these guys will make a decision at the last minute, and if they've got fertilizer on the ground, they'll plant the corn. If they don't have it, then I think they switch to beans. And, you know, Informa kind of saw some of that finally yesterday and being a little more realistic than their corn and their soybean numbers.
Merrill Crowley, you have a question for Jerry?
Yeah, given the tight situation in the soybean market, in your opinion, what's the reasoning for the current price decline?
Well, I think you mentioned that as far as the spread is, goes, and, you know, this whole thing, I think we've underestimated as analysts and traders, and a lot of people out there who have tried to sell the July and buy the Nove, you know, type thing, have been getting killed on that spread. But we may be underestimating the global demand for protein and feed grain as far as that goes, too, because it just doesn't seem to want to give up. Eventually it will. We'll get to the point where, you know, we'll decide that I'd rather wait for $2 cheaper to buy the early soybeans than to take delivery of the old ones. But that may be the case in beans, where we have a better market out there globally than what we think. And I look at it, and I switch to more soybeans in northern Illinois, just because I think at $12.20 or whatever, I think I got better odds of having a dollar a bushel appreciation in beans sometime between now and the next 12 to 16 months or whatever, a whole year after I plant the soybeans, that I think I can get this price again. So this is probably maybe worst case, irrespective of what happens in the fall. If we do plant a lot of beans and we have, which I think we will, and we have a lower price, Informa thinks in that 9 number, but if in the high 9s or low 10s, we send a message to Brazil that maybe they don't want to do as much as they did, and we may very well attract buying into that situation. And unlike corn, I look at soybeans. You know, we grow a crop, a U.S.-like crop, every 6 months. So I've got odds that either I'm going to have a bad crop or a big one that sends a message to South America at a low price, or they may have a crop problem down the road a ways and that I gain from it. So it's a little different than corn for me. And so I look at more like the future. Which one will I lose the most on if I plant it? And I think I lose more on corn than if I do on soybeans.
Bill Gentry?
Yeah, going back to your discussion about underestimating demand, looking last year at what the USDA was forecasting for a carryout in corn and their demand numbers, we've outstripped their demand numbers consistently, and now we're staring, instead of a 1.8 billion bushel carryout, we're staring a 1.1 in the face. Next year's forecasted price is probably 50 to a dollar lower than this year, yet they're showing lower exports and lower domestic consumption. How do we justify higher carryouts with lower prices?
Well, good point. And I didn't believe that we could double our exports as quick as we did, and that's it kind of fooled me as well. But that's something the market hasn't addressed, and it does show next year that, you know, we have 1.7 billion left over. And I noticed that Informa is, you know, lowering their acres. And in their report that will come out this afternoon, they'll likely use a 163, not a 165, in their lowered acres number. And that's like a 1.7 at what I look at is maybe a 165 at the best possible conditions, 165 bushels an acre, maybe a stretch this year if we don't get the crop in until real late up north. We do have 40% of that crop left to put in, or 30, give it a stretch, maybe 30%. That's still a lot of acres, you know, 27 million acres. And I don't know how you accomplish a 10%, how you plant 2.7 million acres for this crop this quickly in 1 week, if that's what they think we're going to do. But from a demand standpoint, I look back at it, and from a macro standpoint, I guess, and you go back to almost every country in the world who is using feed grains, and some of the newer developing countries are using more feed grains. So when you look at it, we're growing more corn, supposedly worldwide, and our demand is going up, too. So all the time we had $7 a bushel, fortunately, we didn't miss a beat, and Ukraine came in and stepped up and filled the void that we couldn't fill, and now we're in there filling that pipeline again. I think we're... where the USDA is saying to us is that we're going to get some competition starting in July and August maybe and into fall out of Argentina and Brazil that we aren't getting now because they're concentrating on getting rid of the soybeans. And, of course, using their 165 number, that could change one way or the other, but more than likely it could come down unless a miracle happens again this year. So I think we've probably seen the best production numbers and maybe the best carryover in new crop corn. And certainly if we go lower, as you pointed out, we're just going to be more competitive, I think, and we'll export more. Maybe we'll get that 200 million bushel exports back again, and it'll look like a Goldilocks situation, which is what we probably need, is not too bad, not too good, and we continue to not crash this corn below $4 and certainly not get back above $6.50 again.
And Brian Stark.
Yeah, I wonder, Jerry, if you could talk a little bit about extrapolating a little bit more on the carryout. One of the things that surprised us on Friday of last week when the USDA released the numbers was we all thought they would increase the corn export number maybe 50 million. They bumped it 150 million, which seems to us to be a stretch. Where we thought they might switch is given up until this week the wheat-corn relationship. We thought potentially you could see less wheat feeding and more corn feeding. That didn't happen. Neither one of those numbers changed. And I just wondered if you'd give us some thoughts on your view of those numbers.
Well, you know, I've talked to the people and know some of them well enough, and that I don't call them friends necessarily, but they will quickly tell me, you know, Jerry, our job is to quantify the numbers and present the facts as we see them today. And they may say, Jerry, you may think that wheat crop isn't out there. We don't know yet. We're not going to tell you something that we don't, can't quantify as researchers and hard numbers people. And I remember them telling me, I met with Jerry Banging, some of those on World Outlook Board. He said, Jerry, your job is to speculate. You and your friends can speculate. Our job is to present the best information we can. So I think as they see the numbers now, they're going to be pretty conservative in this and then see a better situation, numbers come out of the wheat area. But certainly I think you're right. We haven't reflected yet that wheat feeding is going to probably be non-existent, except we always feed some wheat at harvest because that's the best time to buy the soft red and the red wheat in the feeding areas and so forth. So we'll probably see that come down, and that's the good news is that there's probably room to move. I thought they would increase maybe ethanol usage a little bit more and maybe increase feed usage a little bit more in corn, like you mentioned, but maybe that's yet to come. They've got room to do that. You know, they can use those numbers to increase demand if turns out that they are more confident in their production numbers. If they raise production 100 million, they may offset that by 50 or 40 million of new usage. So I think that's the key I always try to keep in my mind is that their job is to prevent, as he said, our job is to prevent the best fundamental information at the time for me or you or anybody else that reads it or listens to make the best judgment. And you can go from there, Jerry, do what you want, he told me, but we're not going to speculate on the future. That's the job of the Board of Trade.
You, of course, are listening to Commodity Week. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Jerry Gulke is our special guest this afternoon. Our panelists include Merrill Crowley. He's with Crowley Commodities, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities, and Brian Stark of the Andersons. You can find us online at willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Find us online at willag.org. Now here's Jim Angel, climatologist with the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, with an update of the weather forecast.
The first half of May has been warmer and wetter than average for most of Illinois. The statewide temperature for May so far is 61.2 degrees That's 1.4 degrees above average. Precipitation varied from 3 to 6 inches in the eastern half of the state and in the southwest as well. Much of the western and central part of the state received 1 to 3 inches. The Climate Prediction Center released their forecast for this summer. In Illinois for June, there is an increased chance of below-average temperatures north of Interstate 74 and an increased chance of above-average precipitation south of Interstate 74. For the period June through August, the increased chance of below-average temperature lingers in the northern third of the state. The National Weather Service forecasts indicate a slow warming trend over the next few days. Highs will be in the low 60s on Saturday and in the mid-60s on Sunday and near 70 on Monday and into the upper 70s and 80s on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Lows on Sunday and Monday morning will be in the 40s and warm up into the 50s and 60s by the end of the week. It looks like a quiet week for precipitation with only a slight chance on Thursday and Friday.
Our thanks to Jim Angel for his update of the agricultural weather forecast. Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago on the weekly trade, the high and the low for the session all week long, and the weekly change Friday to Friday. In the corn pit nearby July, remember the maize expired. The July had a high this week of $5.06 and a quarter, the low at $4.80 and a quarter. July corn at $4.83 and a half finished down 24 cents. That near its 50-day moving average. December corn futures, the new crop, down 17 and 3 quarters at $4.81 a bushel Friday to Friday. Soybeans, nearby July contract, a high for the week at $14.96, the low at $14.60 and a half, a settlement price down 22 at $14.65. A new crop November, Friday to Friday, settled at $12.21 and a half, down 4 and 3 quarters, bean meal at $480.20. And the bean oil at $40.75. By the way, the bean oil was down 43 cents for the week. Soft red winter wheat, $6.74 and a quarter. The settlement price in the July contract, down 48 and a quarter cents. The high at $7.22 and a quarter. The low on the week at $6.70 and a half. The hard red July at $7.67 and three quarters, finished 61 cents lower for the week. June live cattle, $137.90. The settlement price on the week, down 15 cents. The August feeders at $193.32 and a half, are up $1.95. And the June lean hogs this week settled at $118.92 and a half, down $1.25 from their settlement price last Friday. Remember, you can always find us online at WILLAG.org. There you'll find all of the agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media. If you follow Twitter, you can look us up there too. My handle is at Commodity Week. This agricultural program comes to you from the University of Illinois. This is the May 16 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's continue now our conversation with Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group. He is in Chicago, Illinois. Jerry, you were talking about wheat and what it might mean to the marketplace as we wrapped up the first half of the program, suggesting that it may not be fed. But I'm wondering if it comes in out of condition, won't that go into the marketplace?
Probably will. Certainly at a discount, they have a tendency to do that. They can keep the price at whatever, $7, then discount the blazes to it. I've been there, done that. That's why I don't raise wheat anymore, and that's why we don't raise a lot of wheat in North Dakota anymore, because as those fellows up there will tell me, my cousin farms our land. He said, I can take corn and I can take soybeans and I can look at it and say, yeah, that's number one beans, number two corn. But if I take wheat into the market, spring wheat mainly and winter wheat, hard red winter wheat that grew up there, he said, there's all kinds of discounts they're going to come up with to where it's not just price, but they come up with another 90 or $1.10 discount. One thing about wheat that I didn't mention is that my son-in-law farms up in north of Minot, and they grow fantastic hard red winter wheat up there. I didn't believe we could do that, and we didn't when I was a kid up there, but he has lost, as he said yesterday, 100% of his hard red winter wheat. First time, and he's not that old in his lifetime, that he's lost all his wheat. A lot of the wheat is gone there. Northern Illinois, my agronomist said about 80% of whatever we plant up there is gone. That'll go to soybeans probably. My son-in-law in North Dakota will plant soybeans on that. Spring wheat, it takes about as much money to grow spring wheat as it does corn up there, and and the love affair with corn has kind of waned a little, so they're going to barley, sunflower seeds, and that type of thing. Mainly sunflowers will work in the northwest part, but along the northern border, the absence of canola is going to be pronounced. It will likely go to soybeans as well, and I don't think Informa has a great presence in North Dakota to really get a good handle on it, at least because I'm prejudiced because we have relatives and actually farm up there. But I think we're underestimating the acres of wheat and the production. I was going to inform us stuff, and I don't think they believe that any hard red wing of wheat failed up in North Dakota yet, and there's been a lot of it, a significant portion of it, which surprised a lot of people, and it got killed in 2014, not last fall.
Jerry, the cattle on feed numbers released Friday afternoon came in just about where the trade had expected them. I'm wondering whether you think the livestock numbers in general, PEDV for hogs, and then, of course, the lack of number of animals in total for cattle that are available will show up eventually in the grain stocks report.
Well, you would think that would happen, but, you know, a lot of our clients are feeding the cattle heavier, just like they are hogs. And with the heavier feeding comes a little less efficiency, but we've got clients that have got contracts now to feed hogs to 320 pounds well into October. And that's maybe a dangerous situation to play because it takes more feed to get there, but they've sold them at a high price, so they're going to do it. We may probably very well make up the difference in these cattle weights. Again, I use my relatives in North Dakota. My daughter and son-in-law just bought 200 head of cows, bred cows with calves. Everybody wants to be in that cow-calf operation business now, so I hope they have a couple of years ahead of them of profit yet. But we seem to be finding the feeder cattle and feeding them a lot heavier. And I think I'm just wondering about these poultry people because we see this huge demand for meal. Yet we don't see the numbers coming out of the poultry guys as if they're taking advantage like I thought they would to expand the poultry situation. So either they're not telling us and the poultry expansion is bigger that's going to try to capture some of that market, but certainly our consumer preference is yet to be determined out here. You know, I wonder sometimes whether it's not, you know, a high-priced meat at the market is not like high-priced fuel was. I complained about $4.50 fuel until I could buy it under $4, you know. And so we get used to it, and we still consume.
Okay, thanks so much, Jerry. Jerry Gulke, of course, is with the Gulke Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today included Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities from Watsika, Illinois, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.